Welcome to the Rapid Reaction podcast, which is the shorter of our podcast series. I'm Ian Martin, editor of Reaction, and I'm joined by Maggie Pagano, executive editor of Reaction. So today, really, Maggie, it's all about Boris, isn't it, in British terms? Well, I know there's a lot going on in health terms, but the principal focus of the story, and particularly Westminster or what's left of it, is where is the Prime Minister?
Yeah, well, we know that he's in St. Thomas's and that he has been on oxygen. He's had this virus for over 10 days now, still has the persistent cough. And I think the fears are that he may have pneumonia, but he is in safe hands. It's clear that, you know, he's had it for a long time. It's 10 days, isn't it? And that's quite a long shift, and has clearly been trying to work, you know, helter skelter. And his partner, Carrie, has also had it, but supposedly recovering. But it does leave, they perhaps know who's running the country, but it leaves the country perhaps asking the question, who is really running the country? So, Ian, do you know who is de facto in charge?
Yeah, the press conference this afternoon, it was one of the major themes, and there is the answer from number 10 as of now, might change again this evening, we're recording this on Monday evening, is that there's nothing to worry about. There's a perfectly straightforward explanation, which is that Boris is still running things, but his designated survivor, Dominic Raab, is in place. It's not really very satisfactory, because you then discover that it became clear, and I'm sure Raab is answering as honestly as he can and being as straightforward as he can, but he hasn't spoken to Boris since Saturday.
No, but I suspect that's because Boris probably was running the country right up until the moment that the doctors said, right, we're taking you off, this is too long. You know, these are too persistent. So
but that's curious. That's curious in itself when you consider that Dominic Raab is, as well as being designated survivor, though not deputy prime minister, we'll come to that in a second. He's also one of the four ministers who runs what are they called the MAG groups, which is the ministerial advisory clusters, which is Raab on foreign stuff and Gove on the public sector and Matt Hancock on health. Mm-hmm. So you would imagine that the conversation's going on all the time. Maybe not. Maybe they decided to take a break. The difficulty for number 10 is that while it was being said all last week and being denied by number 10 that the situation was more serious and that he was more ill than was being admitted to, well, that was denied. So there's a bit of a trust issue there from a media from a media point of view. And I think why some people listening to this and some people watching the press conference will say, well, why on earth are the press going on about this? Why does this matter? He's ill. It happens. It does look as though he has, to his credit in one sense, he's pushed on through trying to carry on working. And wanting to really, you know, steer the ship of state, when the evidence of this terrible condition seems to suggest that you're best just giving into it and taking to your bed for 7 days or 10 days or 14 days, no matter how long it takes. But he didn't do that. He tried to work through. Mm-hmm. It's then being persistent, and they're now left in this situation where they can't quite answer the question. And this is at a point where really difficult, critical decisions have to be made about whether you dial up the lockdown further or increase the lockdown, or whether you can start to think about relaxing some of the restrictions simply because of what's happening to the economy, and very difficult questions about whether or not the rate of infection is flattening off or whether it's too early to say. So I think it is legitimate. We've been critical on this podcast, haven't we, of some of the tone of the questioning, but I do think it's not ridiculous to ask who's actually running the country. But it's not, he should explain, it's not, he's not Rab is not Deputy Prime Minister because we have a strange situation in this country, or a weird patched together setup, don't we?
It's not so much patched up. I think it's sort of, you could say, perfectly designed. The idea is that we've never had a Deputy Prime Minister. It's not built into our executive, if you like, because we don't have a written constitution, and it was always deemed presumptuous to have a deputy because that would suggest that you've got somebody ready to take over, and that wouldn't be, if you like, the amoeba-like constitution that we have. But certain prime ministers have, in over time, had designated deputy prime ministers. Rab is only there because actually he's first secretary of state, so that's a sort of almost honorary position. And in fact, Britain's only ever had two deputy prime ministers that have become prime minister, and that's Eden and Clement Attlee. They're the only two. Otherwise, we've only had about six or seven. I had a quick check. Mm. And of course, Nick Clegg was deputy prime minister. May relied on...
I've completely forgotten
that. Yes, he was probably. But that was pure politics, wasn't it? That was just to give the authority of the coalition, if you like. But yeah, only Attlee during the war, obviously, to Churchill, and then Eden at the end.
I do think it's a mistake in Boris's case, and
not to have appointed someone.
I emphasize again. It sounds like petty politics at a time when the guy is ill, and clearly he's been working very hard, and he and Carrie are, you know, in this terrible situation. So you know people are understandably very sympathetic, but I think such is the nature of Boris's approach to being prime minister, the way in which he's very new to the job. He is a generalist. He's not that hot on detail. There was, even before this, there was Brexit, remember that, coming through, and a lot to organise. And we now find ourselves as a country in this extraordinary crisis. And I just think at that point, it would have been far preferable a couple of weeks ago when he first became ill to be able for him to be able to point to Deputy Prime Minister and say, X person
will take over.
Yeah, will take over if I'm incapacitated. Mm-hmm. And of course, the background to this and why that was never done is it's about political insecurity, ultimately. And the obvious person to do that would be Michael Gove, in terms of experience and the position he plays in the Cabinet Office. But there's an obvious problem there between them, which is why they work together perfectly well, it seems, at the moment. There's always that hangover of 2016 and the leadership race that went wrong, and in Boris's terms, the betrayal of what happened in 2016. So that meant it couldn't. If you're a sort of paranoid supporter of Boris, then it couldn't be Gove. And obviously, Sajid Javid is gone, and Rishi Sunak is new, and a rival to Boris.
Has emerged. Rather looks like Hancock and Sunak have sort of got antlers locked, haven't they?
Yeah.
They're the young Turks ready to take over. Can I just pick up on something, Ian, you said earlier? And it is obviously, particularly in the mainstream media, the predictable response to what's happened, which is that they lied about Boris as to the extent of his illness last week. I mean, I don't know the man very well, but it seems to fit to me, to his personality, that he will have tried and he will have worked. He will not have wanted to give up. So it might well have been that he was pretending that he was better than he was.
That's perfectly possible, yeah.
Yeah, and I sort of sense that that's perhaps, you know, I also tend to see the cock-up theory of history rather than the conspiracy, that he really was trying to do it right up until yesterday. At some point, clearly, he was very, very unwell. So maybe he didn't feel there was a need. Maybe I'm being too generous here. I'm sure the politics played into it.
It's difficult to know. Because maybe I have to wait for his memoirs afterwards. Did he fit? Is there a sense in which the government had been a bit slow initially, and he was determined to stay as in charge as he possibly could? Also, sometimes if you get ill and you don't know how bad it is, you you kind of fight it, just thinking it'll fade after a few days. I'm not suggesting that they openly, they knew that this was going to happen and they lied, but there were suggestions floating around, you know, well-sourced suggestions, hinted at in various newspapers, and I think I mentioned it in the Times, and lots of people were writing it and saying it was that the situation was a bit worse than Number 10 were prepared to admit. But you may well be right, Maggie, that it was simply that he regarded it as stuff and nonsense and wanted to fight his way through it.
So but, what do you think, Ian? He's in hospital now. Clearly we need a point. It probably should be Michael Gove as Cabinet Secretary, as Theresa May did with David Lidington.
That would be my recommendation. I think that would be the best way to organise things. However, I think they'll probably take a day by day view of it, which is that if, fingers crossed, Boris is fine and this was an extra precaution, and after 48 hours he's sitting up in bed and there's absolutely no problem and he's on the mend, then the RAB situation can be seen as a short-term fix, and they'll probably get through it. If it's a bit longer term than that, and he's really knocked sideways by it and needs a longer recuperation, a few weeks, there's already quite a bit of pressure growing from Tory MPs talking on and off the record, who are worried that the peak is happening. This is this is one of those critical phases in the whole crisis, and there is epic economic pain happening at the moment and really just rippling out across the country, across the economy. And you can't have a situation where there isn't someone clearly identified as being in charge. So I think they'll wait and see in the next 24 hours. Though maybe by the time we finish recording this, they'll have updated things. But I think their instinct will be to try and hope for an early return from Boris. But we'll see.
Can we just talk quickly about that on the economic and business front? I don't know if you saw a report earlier on today showing that Switzerland have got money out to their small businesses literally the day after. Now, I know you can hardly compare 66 million people living in Britain to a couple of million in Switzerland. But I think that the ongoing concerns of the small business community are enormous. And yeah. Government have really got to pull their finger out. Otherwise, you know, we are facing millions and millions unemployed. And
I think you're right. We've tried, I think on this podcast, I think, Maggie, we've both tried to be fair about this. It is an unprecedented situation. And he did move quickly and he's new to the job. But with every day that passes and the stories that I hear from other parts of the economy and horror stories that you hear about what's happening to companies, it does look, I know the architects of the scheme are very, very defensive about it, but it does look as though what they've designed is too much of a treasury scheme. It's too fiddly and too complex. I mean, I was talking to someone today who had been on hold to the bank for a long, long time and then finally got through. And there isn't clarity on, for example, repayment periods. There isn't clarity on early redemption. So, you know, some companies would want to, early repayment. So that some companies would want to take a loan of a decent size, even though they're highly profitable companies, which secures their operations for 6 months or for a year, and then possibly not have need of it all and be able to pay it back or to redouble their efforts and pay it back much earlier. But if that comes with sort of punishment clause for paying back early, then that's a disincentive to take the loan in the first place. Or it depends what size the repayment punishment, the early repayment clause is. But no one can tell you. No. And the banks don't really seem to know, and the government isn't clear. And there will be, as this person told me, there'll have to be legislation, a bit like the financial crisis, which catches up later. So it's unclear, even to people in the process who are supposed to be issuing the loans and the people who are seeking the loans. And it's very difficult to actually get through to the person who's going to make the loan happen, because that person I spoke to was still 7 to 10 days away from getting a phone call back to begin the process, although they've filled out all the forms.
And his business might be bust by then.
It's possible. To which there is a counter argument. Well, if you're that cash sensitive, and you have no means of surviving 4 or 5 weeks, then how sound was the business? That's a fair point. But I think you're now getting to the point with businesses that were, you know, perfectly sensible, that didn't have huge amounts of debt, that are very conservative, that if you're into more than a month of this and there isn't clarity about what they can get and their sales have, in some cases, have diminished close to zero, then they're not going to survive much longer than a couple of months, are they?
No, they're absolutely not, which is why, as we've said before, there is an element of risk in this, and you might have 10% of some very, very bad loans, but in a sense, you've got to try and move quickly for the majority who are not trying to play the game.
One positive, just to someone who I was talking to from the other end of it, someone who's trying to save businesses and trying to be as helpful as possible on this, was making the very good point that, isn't it interesting that quite traditional parts of the economy have proved themselves very adaptable? So the country's full of stories of the fruit and veg shop that has retooled to do local delivery, or butchers, or the wine shop. Now, I know it's mostly because that's what people need at the moment. They need food, and people, if they can afford it, they need wine. But I think he makes a good point that certain businesses have retooled and are just looking for other ways of getting some cash through the door. So I don't think it's not all negative.
No, I think a business, particularly small businesses, and I have to say the supermarkets, I think they've been superb in the way they've reacted, and also Britain's manufacturing, which, you know, probably will go through a great renaissance after this. They've been switching from whatever it is they're making, to ventilators, to masks, to PPE. No, I think it's been astonishing. The banks, are slightly different. And I don't blame them. Don't get me wrong. It's a huge process. But then they might just have to try and be a little bit wilder.
I think when you see a continuation, or if it's an acceleration of that process of those huge numbers on universal credit and their applications for universal credit, 950,000 was the last figure. And if you get more of that and you start to see some terrible indicators, then I think the conversation will become really quite difficult for Sunak and for the Treasury and for the government, which is that, well, all these great announcements were made, but it's not really making any difference. But I think we should probably wrap things up there this evening, Maggie. If you're not a Reaction subscriber, go to the website www.reaction.life and you can become a subscriber. It's usually £52 for the year, £26 at the moment for the duration of the crisis, and you get all the great writing that the team do. You get my weekly newsletter and you get to support great journalism. But until next time, thank you for listening.